You are listening to a Bible talk recorded at the 2016 Western Christadelphian Bible School at Manuka. This is the fourth class in a series given by Brother Jeff Pagy on the subject, Second Principles of the Bible Guiding Us on the Way. This class is titled, Defending and Pleading for the Poor.
Well, good morning. Get in day four. I'm seeing the coffees more in hand. We'll get through that. I'll have a little slide at the end. Hopefully, it will hit us as well. So the fourth class here, we've been talking a lot about justice and how to do justice and righteousness. And the class we're going to get into today is defending and pleading for the poor. We'll spend some time talking about some of the challenges that we may go through in our lives of thinking about the poor. And we'll talk about some of the reasons behind poverty. And I think there's a key reason why there are poor in this world, and we'll talk about that as well. But before we get into a lot of the meat, I'm going to start off with a video. And really, does increased wealth or the feeling of wealth impact our empathy for others? And I have a few little slides here that I think highlight some of this. Some of this may be maybe helpful, but this is a video, a TED talk. We're only listening to probably about the first two or three minutes on this of a little study that was done in Berkeley. Does money make you mean? Is the title of the thing here.
We ran a study on the UC Berkeley campus to look at exactly that question. We brought in more than 100 pairs of strangers into the lab, and with the flip of a coin, randomly assigned one of the two to be a rich player in a rigged game. They got two times as much money. When they passed go, they collected twice the salary, and they got to roll both dice instead of one, so they got to move around the board a lot more. And over the course of 15 minutes, we watched through hidden cameras what happened. And what I want to do today for the first time is show you a little bit of what we saw. You're going to have to pardon the sound quality in some cases because, again, these were hidden cameras. So we've provided subtitles.
How many 500s did you have?
Just one.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I have three. I don't know why they gave me so much.
Okay, so it was quickly apparent to players that something was up. One person clearly has a lot more money than the other person. And yet, as the game unfolded, we saw very notable differences and dramatic differences begin to emerge between the two players. The rich player started to move around the board louder, literally smacking the board with their piece as he went around. We were more likely to see signs of dominance and nonverbal signs of display, displays of power and celebration among the rich players. All right, we had a bowl of pretzels positioned off to the side. It's on the bottom right corner there. That allowed us to watch participants' consumatory behavior. So we're just tracking how many pretzels participants eat.
Those pretzels are...
Okay, so no surprises. People are on to us. They wonder what that bowl of pretzels is doing there in the first place. One even asks, like you just saw, is that bowl of pretzels there as a trick? And yet, despite that, the power of the situation seems to inevitably dominate, and those rich players start to eat more pretzels. And as the game went on, one of the really interesting and dramatic patterns that we observed begin to emerge was that the rich players actually started to become ruder for the other person. Less and less sensitive to the plight of those poor, poor players, and more demonstrative of their material success. More likely to showcase how well they're doing. Okay. And here's what I think was really, really interesting is that at the end of the 15 minutes, We asked the players to talk about their experience during the game. And when the rich players talked about why they'd inevitably won in this rigged game of Monopoly, they talked about what they'd done to buy those different properties and earn their success in the game. And they became far less attuned to all those different features of the situation, including that flip of a coin that had randomly gotten them into that privileged position in the first place. And that's a really, really incredible insight.
So that was a very interesting TED Talk. You want to listen to the whole thing. It's about 20 minutes long, and it talks about just the impacts of wealth that has just on our DNA. And I think we talked a little bit about yesterday how in our DNA we get a lot of I did this, we did this, I made this great decision. Studies are out there on psychology and how things play through, and just even in the cars that we drive. Studies are out there. They did a study where in the state of California they had an individual stand at a crosswalk, and they looked at the types of cars that would stop for that crosswalk. All the junkers, all the old cars would 100% of the time stop for a pedestrian in the crosswalk. All the BMWs, about 50% of the time they stop for the pedestrian in the crosswalk. It's a state law in California that if you see someone just about to get in the crosswalk, you need to stop. So it affects our psyche. And if you drive a BMW, we'll talk a little bit about the end, about how to change that, some of that mindsets and things as well. I'm just amazed at what our society has around us. I manage a group of people, and a lot of times we get youngsters right out of college. They get that first job. I tell you, those guys drive a lot nicer cars than I do. And I know the salary they do. I mean, they go out there. They look for this. They feel like I'm entitled to this vehicle and this car. So the car affects our attitudes as well. And we've been talking about this, and there's studies that are out there that just emulate what we know in the Bible as well, that the human thinking towards wealth generally increase wealth. You basically have less empathy. And we'll talk a little bit about, we're all wealthy in this room one way or the other, and we'll talk towards the end here how to get empathy and have empathy towards our fellow mankind. But our minds tell us, I have earned this. Those words have even come out of my mouth. I just, 60 days ago, 90 days ago, was at a cabin up in the Sierras. Had a disagreement with the owner of these cabins. I thought he was stiffing me, $200. Those words, I had earned this. So those words come out of my mouth as well. It's basically God has given me the riches that we have in more ways than one. Basically, more wealth, more entitlement to wealth. We're more prone to keep wealth at the detriment of others. That's just something that is out there in society around us. I see so much of us trying to keep our status quo and increase the things we have. The parable of the rich fool, I just love this parable. And you see the human DNA coming through on this. I've highlighted in yellow as we go through this parable. Just count the amount of times that this rich fool, this rich, wealthy individual looks to himself of what he has done. In Luke 12, verse 15, then he said to them, beware and be on your guard against every form of greed. Not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. And Christ told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man was very productive. And he began reasoning to himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops? Then he said, this is what I will do. I'll tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods, and I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your soul is required of you, and now who will own what you have prepared?" So I go through that verse. I'm just reminded, I counted 14 times. You may look at some of the other pronouns, I count 15 or 16. 14 times the human spirit basically says, "I have done this." And that is something that we're trying to struggle with, because we realize at the end of the day, it's God who provides. Even the breath we breathe in every day, every second of our lives, the breath we bring in gets us going, keeps us going, is a gift from God. God allows us to do that. So these next couple of slides are slides that James Flint has put together with our Agapan Action Work. And I think some of these stats are just are really telling for me. Over 800 million people go to sleep hungry. That's 11% of the world and double the population of the United States. I was pretty impressed with the young people. They went to the next phase pretty quickly. How much food do we throw away? Wealthy countries waste 15,000 pounds of food every second. This equates to 19% of all the food we buy. One out of every five apples. One out of every five bananas. You know, it's just amazing, amazing stat when you realize that one out of every 10 of our fellow human beings on this planet goes to bed hungry. I get to travel with my work quite a bit, and I travel across the Midwest in the past years. I see those cornfields upon cornfields upon cornfields there. I realize that we have so much food that we take that food and now we put it into our fuel to pass through our cars. It's not even to feed fellow human beings anymore. It's to put ethanol into our cars so it helps them get going. It's just amazing, the haves and the have-nots. Other stats are out there for doctors. The United States, we have some great health care here. We have 245 doctors for every 100,000 population. You look at some of the less fortunate countries out there, and I'm always amazed at hearing the stories of what Doctors Without Borders and some of these other nonprofit groups do. 10 doctors per 100,000 in Guyana, in Guinea, 2.2 in Sierra Leone, 1.4 doctors in Liberia for every 100,000 in population. This next stat really took me aback when I first saw it. There are more slaves now than any time in history. There's more slaves in this world today than any time in history. Now, that's a part of the denominator of the equation, right? I mean, the world population is big. It's probably the biggest it's been, and we're probably going to see it decline by the end of the century if Christ remains away. We can talk a little bit more about that. But this equates to 35 double-decker loads of men, women and children are trafficked every day and forced into sexual exploitation, crime, domestic servitude, and slave labor. You hear about the child warriors in Africa. You hear some of these things come through. And human trafficking is even here in the United States. Every year, 50,000 women and children are brought into the United States to work as slaves. And it's probably not the slaves that we read about in our history books. They're slaves, most likely of the sexual orientation. So these are stats that are out there that get you to move. And, you know, it hit me 25 years ago when I was doing Truth Corps, going in Camden, New Jersey, across the river from Philadelphia. It's the first time in my middle-class upbringing I ever saw a red-light district, and just realizing the things that are there. It is in the world around us. So the need is great, but then we come down into it, and sometimes you have to understand the drivers. Why are there poor in the world? And as you go through it, you probably think of many different reasons associated with it. One, some people choose to be poor. I think of Mother Teresa. I think of some of these others that have given basically all their lives to do things. I know you probably know some in the Brotherhood who have chosen a life of doing mission service. And really, you go into their houses, they have very little. What's the poorest person we know that we think about every Sunday? Our Lord and Savior. He chose to be poor. Poor in this world to be filled with the things of a world to come. Sometimes bad things do happen to people. We think of some of the health issues that some have gone through, and in order just to keep them or a family member alive, spend a lot of their resources and time to get those people to get fellow family members or themselves to where they need to be. Sometimes it is sin, the infirmities of the flesh. And if you just go through, there's a podcast called Embedded that talks about the painkiller epidemic in some parts of the United States, where half of the population of this one town is hooked on painkillers. You know, just going after addiction. I know some may be challenged with addiction, and some have gone to such an extreme where it does put them into a very poor state. Last one there, oppression by the rich. You see the inequality of resources coming through. And you hear other stories of oppression by the rich. I mean, one of the things that I look at all the stuff we do with Meal a Day and the stuff we do with Agape in Action, it's great. There's a lot of good things we're doing with it. And the last thing that comes into a lot of these things is still, is there good justice in the area? Is there good law and order in the area? I've heard stories coming out of El Salvador. A high school girl does have food in her home, does have the ability to get an education, but she's so afraid to leave her door that she stays home day in and day out. So law and order in these situations, oppression by the rich gangs in these areas are things that keep poverty in this world. So another thing I've gone through in my life and really thought about, some of the myths. What are myths about poverty? And one that comes up for me that I struggle with sometimes is, well, the poor are lazy. The poor people are lazy. And about a year ago, right around this time frame, this myth was really brought home to me. So I have a map up here. If you don't know the area, it's where the 5 and the 99 come together. I drive down the 99 on a regular basis. I'll tell you about my 3-hour commute. South of Bakersfield. Anybody knows what's grown south of Bakersfield?
Used to be cotton.
It's now grapes. So this time of year is grape picking season. So I'm driving down the 99. Usually there's these off-ramps here that are just rural off-ramps. There's nothing around. At 4:30 in the morning when I do this drive down here, 4:30 in the morning, these off-ramps have traffic that's backed up 2-3 miles long getting off on these off-ramps at 4:30 in the morning. But most of us are asleep. At 4:30 in the morning, people are getting off to go to work. In our area, Tulare County is where I live. It's one of the poorest counties in California. I do get to have the chance to interact with some of these individuals. They come up to the river. One time we went to the river and we're there with our family swimming, and I saw another family there swimming as well. Some of these guys I would not have interacted with normally. We just start asking, so what do you do for work? You know, I work 12-hour shifts out down at the butcher. You know, bringing in the cattle and giving us our steaks and our ground beef and those type of things. They work hard and they spend time with their families as well. These individuals probably put a lot of us to shame in how much they could, do in a day. I work long hours. I know these individuals work long hours. My long hours are sitting behind a desk in an air-conditioned building. A lot of these are working long hours in the heat of the day. Here's another one that probably a lot of my conservative friends would probably highlight. Poor people get by on the benefits, while the rest of us have to work for everything. The poor people get by on benefits while the rest of us have to work for everything. And yes, you can look at the benefits that these could get. You hear stories of, they don't actually get married, but they have a commonwealth marriage. One of the guys stays with his mom. That's his mailing address. So his wife with the kids get all the benefits of the Social Security and the food stamps and free education, things like that. And you could actually go through and add that up to be probably $55,000-$60,000 in benefits that that family could earn, potentially not earning it. Okay, there's the exception to the rule. But then I look at amount of the benefits that we, as general middle class people, would eventually line up for. We line up for Medicare when we get to that age. We have Social Security. Here's a big one that I think a lot of people overlook. Most of us who are homeowners, the mortgage interest deduction. That is a huge benefit. In a lot of cases, we as homeowners are paying less in rent than what the poor people would pay because of the deduction of the interest off our off the income. A small one, the senior citizens pass national parks. You see it going up there. So proud. You pay $10 for the rest of your lives. You don't have to worry about that, and you get to go to these great national parks. Where anybody else who wants to go into it, what is it, $40 now to the Grand Canyon? $40 to Yosemite? It's $30 to go to Sequoia National Park. I don't know what it is down here at Crater Lake. Is it $20 now? So those things add up. Just things. I think, again, there's benefits for all the tax code that we see. So I love this quote as we came through it and study this. Don't use your power to benefit yourselves at others' expense. Use it to benefit others at your expense. I haven't heard of Cameron's talk, but I think he has encouraged us to, we have to give to, it hurts a little bit. And I would encourage us as we think about our time, our money, our effort, we give until it hurts a little bit. I go back to Nehemiah. We talked about Nehemiah and dealing with the famine. I mean, he was in the haves. And he could have continued to get rich in his example there of off of his fellow brothers and sisters. But he was pretty much to the point. I don't care what it is. We all have to share and get through this famine. So we've talked a lot about this, and I want to talk about our motives. And our motives when we give or we do anything in life sometimes can be very jaded. I'll just use it for me as an example. Coming up and giving a talk at a Bible school. Am I doing it for all the pats on the back afterwards? Or am I doing this to hopefully lead you along a different way? When I went on Truth Corps or did some of the mission work that I've done in the past, was I doing it for all the accolades and you see all the people's faces when you talk about it, just being, ooh, that's such a great thing, and all the personal satisfaction? Or was I doing it for God? I tell you, these are things I personally struggle with, brothers and sisters. But I think at the end of the day, our motives, we have to do the activity, but keep striving for the pure motives. And I came across this story. There's three individuals in it on this. And the motives for helping the poor, we need to keep them pure. So there's three individuals through this. I highlighted them on the slide so you could kind of see how the story played through. There's a duke, there's a poor man, and there's a steward. So the Duke of Burgundy was waited upon by a poor man, a very loyal subject who brought him a very large root which he had grown. He was a poor man indeed, and every root that he grew in his garden was a consequence to him. But merely a loyal offering, he brought it to his prince, the largest his little garden could produce. The prince was so pleased with the man's evident loyalty and affection that he gave him a very large sum. The steward thought, well, I see this pays. This man has got 50 pounds for his large root. I think I shall make the duke a present. So he bought a horse. And he reckoned that he should have it in return 10 times as much for it as it was worth. And he presented it with that in view. The duke, like a wise man, quietly accepted the horse and gave the greedy steward nothing. So I always hear that what we give will get tenfold back. I believe that's a lot of the cases and a lot of the activities I've done in the past. But is that our motives behind it? So I encourage us to have those pure motives of what we do and not just do it for the sake of doing it. So why do we have the poor? I believe we'll have the poor no matter how good we are at helping them until Christ returns. You have in Deuteronomy 15, verse 11, it says, God says, "For the poor will never cease to be in the land." And it really kind of hit me when I read that. No matter what we do, no matter what we try to do in life, the poor will always be in the land that we deal with. "Therefore, I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy and poor in your land." So the poor are there for us to be reminded that we need to be given. The poor are there for us to remind us that what we have is not what I have earned, but what God has blessed you with and give to, and what are you going to do to give to others. And we see the examples all the way through the Old Testament. You go through the Old Testament, we're not going to look these verses up, but every third year a tithe was given to care for the poor. Part of the collection of that third year was to be given to the poor. The poor were free to have all that grew spontaneously in the field or vineyard during the sabbatical year. So every 7 years the land was supposed to be at rest. But if you go out to any land, you'll see the land growing, still growing some of that same crop or some of the same grapes. They were there for the poor, for them as well. Every year, the poor were allowed to glean on the fields and vineyards. The corners of the field were to be left for them. And if a sheaf was forgotten, it belongs to the poor. So do a lot of driving in agricultural areas. Every once in a while you'll see a hay bale or a box of oranges or something like that that just did not make it to the truck. Just imagine if you had that freedom to go out there. This next one I like. "The poor can eat fruit and ripe grain in the field, but it shouldn't be carried away." So you drive down these highways and you see these do not enter signs. Trespassers will be prosecuted. You know, the poor, if they really were hungry, going out and picking that orange, picking that apple, picking that grain to eat it. It was there for them. The poor were invited to participate in the annual Feast of Weeks. Every seventh year, debts were released. Jewish slaves were set free on the seventh year of service. During Jubilee, all lands were returned to their original owners. So the hard times do come, and the haves are supposed to be helping the have-nots. And sometimes they would use their land as part of the payment to help them through it. But every 7 years, that land was supposed to return back to that family for them to get going again. Pretty amazing verses on what we're supposed to be doing here. You go to the New Testament here. Jesus started his ministry saying he came to preach to the poor. You look at the verses there. Jesus gave to show that God expects his people to care for the poor as well. The early church cared for the poor. So you go through Acts 2, Acts 4, Acts 6. You see the church looking out for each other and helping each other out. You see Stephen being put in a role to help administer things in the church. You see that coming through that. You see Paul continues his care and his ministry to the Gentiles in Galatians. You see Paul instructs the churches to care for the poor time and time again. Paul even fundraises for the Jews that are still back in, for the Jews in Corinth. And I did not put our brother up to it this morning when he read James chapter 2. But I love that first part of James chapter 2. James chapter 1, pure religion is something that we need to be doing as part of our view. So we go through these classes. We've been talking a lot about this. We talked about how we need to have pure motives. But should we have sympathy for the poor or empathy for the poor? And we could go into that a little bit here. I really think it's empathy. And I found another little talk that would probably explain empathy and sympathy in a lot clearer, a lot more concise pictures than what I did here. So I'm going to try this again over to the video here.
So what is empathy, and why is it very different than sympathy? Empathy fuels connection. Sympathy drives disconnection. Empathy, it's very interesting. Teresa Wiseman is a nursing scholar who studied professions, very diverse professions where empathy is relevant, and came up with four qualities of empathy. Perspective taking, the ability to take the perspective of another person or recognize their perspective as their truth. Staying out of judgment, not easy when you enjoy it as much as most of us do. Recognizing emotion in other people and then communicating that. Empathy is feeling with people. And to me, I always think of empathy as this kind of sacred space when someone's kind of in a deep hole and they shout out from the bottom and they say, I'm stuck, it's dark, I'm overwhelmed. And then we look and we say, hey, climb down. I know what it's like down here. And you're not alone. Sympathy is, ooh, it's bad, uh-huh. No. You want a sandwich? Empathy is a choice, and it's a vulnerable choice, because in order to connect with you, I have to connect with something in myself that knows that feeling. Rarely, if ever, does an empathic response begin with at least. And we do it all the time. Because you know what? Someone just shared something with us that's incredibly painful, and we're trying to silver lining it. I don't think that's a verb, but I'm using it as one. We're trying to put the silver lining around it. So I had a miscarriage. Oh, at least you know you can get pregnant. I think my marriage is falling apart. At least you have a marriage. John's getting kicked out of school. At least Sarah is an A student. But one of the things we do sometimes in the face of very difficult conversations is we try to make things better. If I share something with you that's very difficult, I'd rather you say, I don't even know what to say right now. I'm just so glad you told me. Because the truth is, rarely can a response make something better. What makes something better is connection.
All righty. So I hope that was helpful, understanding, I think, our empathy towards others. Looking for that common connection that we could relate and get in with the individuals there. So like I said, I thought that could be a lot better said through somebody who studies this and does that than trying to get into my words. But we talked about at the beginning how wealth does have the chance to make us less empathetic to others. I do believe empathy is still part of all of us, and we do still have it in all of us, no matter what level of wealth we're at. I know we're in the fourth day. There are studies out there that say once one person yawns, another person yawn, and another person yawn, and it has to do a lot more with our empathy for others than necessarily we're all tired. We may all be tired as well, but it does have to do with that as well. There are other studies as well that we've been talking about. I keep coming back to this 15 seconds. You know, we get going in life so, you know, we're just so busy in life going through things and being busy and doing activities. Are we taking the time to just take that 15 seconds and see things and see an image or a verse or something that would really trigger our empathetic selves? And studies are out there, no matter rich or poor, no matter what level the people come from. You show them images of some of the images we have down here. I've been keeping this image up on the bottom right on the slides for some time here. Just concentrate on an image that triggers our mind to say, hey, I need to start thinking about others. No matter rich or poor, if both see that image, both would be more empathetic, leaving the room, leaving the area, and still be looking to help how they could help others as well. So as we're going through life, we get going in our lives, I would encourage you to have ways to come back on a regular basis. Sometimes our lives are so scheduled that we need to schedule our empathy time. That we have these some of the verses that we've talked about. We have some of these images that we talked about. We have some of these meal a day or agape in action videos that we look at on a regular basis just to say as a reminder that I need to be empathetic to others. We may be wealthy in monetary standards. We may be wealthy in terms of how we deal mentally at a certain stage in life. We may be wealthy in terms of how our spiritual batteries are loaded up. Are we looking out for those that are around us that may not have the money, may not have the attitude that they need to at this stage, or the spiritual level that they need to be at? And are we reaching out to them? So we spend a lot of time just going through these talks and going through these thoughts. And again, I just encourage you to keep a way to get that image, that verse, those things in front of you on a regular basis. Because we do get busy in life, things go on autopilot, and we can be that BMW, not even seeing the person in the street trying to cross. Are we stopping and taking that time and moving forward here? So with all our classes here, I like to close them up with a time to just really let us reflect and really think of what we talked about. So with that, I'll ask for you guys to close your eyes, clear your minds, give God the glory for His majesty. Think about all the things that God has blessed you in life with. If it is wealth, give Him the glory. If it's health, give Him the glory as well. With the awesome responsibility that He has given you, I'd like for you to think of some who maybe poor. Might be their mental state. Might be their health. It might be the monetary state that they are in. We talked about empathy. You need to look for a way of how to relate with that individual or situation. Think about how you could approach that individual or that situation. And continue to ask God to give you the strength to help continue to have your motives to be pure. And how you're dealing with that individual. Having that selfless act of compassion. So you come back to your master. You come back to us with an amen. Amen.